Hey, welcome to Trapital. I'm your host, Dan Runcie. This is your place to gain insights on the business that shapes music, media, and culture. We dive deep into the companies and moguls who start the trends that shape the rest of the business world. One of my favorite classes in school was on crisis management. They would put you in the seat of the key decision makers that are dealing with the dilemma of epic proportions. One of the classic ones is Johnson & Johnson's Tylenol case from 1982. But then there are lower stakes ones that are less of a humanitarian risk, but more of a turnaround issue, such as Coca-Cola and their introduction of New Coke that was flawed from the beginning. But anyone that's interested in music and entertainment could probably focus on the current crisis that has been happening in 2024 at Team OVO. Drake has clearly taken the L in his battle with Kendrick Lamar, and it just feels like things continue to pile on from Kendrick's pop out that he did with his live show in Inglewood, and now most recently Kendrick being named the Super Bowl halftime performer in February 2025. So if you are in the shoes of Drake and the people that are closest to him, where do you go from here? What's your next move? How do you get back to that moment of Drake being the main guy and being the lead in hip-hop, the lead in music that is succeeding in ways that others can't? But to be honest, can you get back to that level at all? And that's going to be the focus of today's conversation. We're diving into the career of Drake. Did we expect it to go this far? What do we think makes the most sense? And what does this say about music and entertainment more broadly? And today, I'm joined by music journalist and author Soumya Krishnamurthy. She's someone that I wanted to have on the show for a while. She has a lot of great thoughts about this space, and we had a really fun conversation. So I hope you enjoy it too. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by SongTrust, where you can start your music publishing journey today. You have plenty of options when it comes to your music publishing, but how many options offer you global royalty collection from 65 collection societies in over 240 countries and territories and allow you to keep 100% ownership of your music? With SongTrust, once your songs start generating royalties, they handle the complexities of song registration and royalty collection. SongTrust ensures efficient publishing collection and transparent royalty tracking, freeing you to focus on creating music. The user-friendly platform offers song monitoring and simplifies the admin process for creators and music businesses at any stage of their careers. If you're a member of a PRO or CMO, have songs distributed on major streaming platforms, own all or part of your composition copyright, and perform live or write for performing artists, then SongTrust is made for you. Learn more today at songtrust.com. That's SongTrust.com. Or you can visit the link in our show notes. All right. Today, we're going to dive into some crisis management for our boy, Aubrey Graham. And I'm joined by music journalist, Soumya Krishnamurthy. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to get into this.
As a recovering Aubrey Angel yourself, you followed the life cycle of Drake through his career. And we've seen him take some wins, we've seen him take some losses, but from everything that's transpired since this spring when everything kicked off between him and Kendrick, did you think that it would have played out this way for Drake?
You know, it's funny. I think inside the music business, there's like a schism. There's the day one Drake fan. So I would put myself in that category. Many of us grew up watching Degrassi. I know I had to admit that out loud. We were fans of his Room for Improvement, Comeback Season. Like I remember so distinctly when he dropped So Far Gone and how some of the older heads in hip hop, they weren't feeling him. It was such a monumental day when Funkmaster Flex played Best I Ever Had on Hot 97. It felt like the hip hop institution. Now, as time went on, a lot of us felt like we outgrew his music. And in turn, we outgrew him. I really did think for a moment when Kendrick and Drake were going to go up against each other, that Drake being the bigger artist commercially, having the more viable commercial hit records, that was going to truly bolster him.
I probably didn't think that he would necessarily win, but I didn't think it would be like this. I thought it would have probably went the same way like the Pusha T beef went, where Pusha clearly got the best of him. But these were artists at two different levels. Drake really hasn't had a clear W in a rap battle since Meek Mill. But again, Meek Mill was never perceived the way that Drake was before that. So Kendrick was always someone that had much more cultural recognition and reputation than Drake did, but I never thought this would be something that would stick.
I like to say, I think what Drake did, one of his fatal mistakes, he confused LA for Hollywood. And in his mind, I'm good in Hollywood. All the celebrities know him. I'm sure his name rings bells in Calabasas within those gated Kardashian communities. But what Kendrick showed, especially with the pop out, is, no, I'm from LA. And there is a very much a difference between people from here who embody all aspects of the culture versus someone who came into it at a much later stage in their career and might seem to be posturing or might seem to be taking parts and appropriating parts of it, but it's not in your DNA. It's not who you are. And I think that was a huge misstep that Drake made. One way to get rid of a bad headline is you just pump out so much content that people forget that you had that bad headline. I think that's what he did with 100 gigs. Maybe we're in this sort of a turning point. People are just like tired of getting the fluff, the junk food. They want something that's a real home-cooked meal, something that's going to stick to their ribs. And I think that's where Kendrick has just continued to win. He drops Not Like Us, waits till July 4th for the video. And since then, we've heard nothing from him until he just dropped that he's going to be headlining the Super Bowl. So when he does say something, he says it very loud. But otherwise, he just lets the records and his records speak for itself, whereas Drake appears to just be spiraling. He doesn't know what to do. And he's trying to pull every single strategy. Now I'm going to big brother the next like young person and try to ingratiate myself with them. And in the past, these things may have worked. And I think parts of it have worked for him beautifully. But we're just in a different age. And I think also Kendrick is a different fighter. You're not dealing with a normal person. Like in my mind, he lives in a rap cave somewhere and just never comes out. You rarely see him in the industry. You rarely see him socially. This is just a person who loves his records. He loves his people. He loves his family. That's all that he does. And I think for Drake, how do you get the boogeyman? And that's the challenge for him.
Drake is good at people that are trying to do the Drake thing themselves, but can't quite get there. That's why 100%. The Meek Mill beef worked out well in his favor. But it was funny. There was a tweet going viral the other day. Someone asked, oh, what is Kendrick doing right now? And he's probably doing burpees and push-ups in his driveway, just minding his own business.
Yeah, writing his next rhyme with a quill or something. He's just a different kind of a person. And even if Kendrick or Pusha, even as men, they're just different types of men. And I don't know if the average fan understands it if you don't talk to these guys behind the scene or have insight into like their personal lives, their family lives. In real life, Aubrey would never be friends with Kendrick, but Kendrick and Terrence would be friends. They're just different kinds of men. And that's not a judgment call by any means, but I'm sure somewhere in the 48 laws of power, I'm sure one of the strategies is you have to know your opponent and going after someone thinking they're going to mirror you when they're just, you're not the same kind of a person. It doesn't work.
And you brought up the Degrassi point earlier. There's the child actor piece of Drake that I think often gets forgotten where you've been a celebrity, you've been in the public life for so long that you don't even know yourself to some extent. And I don't know where Drake may feel like he lies himself on that spectrum, but that's so different from someone like a Pusha T or Kendrick. And I think that goes back to the authenticity of how they are when they're performers. And even in Toronto, we've never seen Drake do anything like the pop out in that way. Maybe to some extent OVO Fest was that in a way, but
it was,
but did it feel more like a true ticketed event or more like I'm bringing and putting the hometown on?
It was definitely a ticketed event, and what it felt like was Drake saying, I'm the gateway, and because of me, these A-list American artists are performing in our town, which I think is great, right? We keep forgetting that before Drake, Toronto wasn't really on the hip-hop map, and some would argue it still isn't. Are there one-offs like the Cardinal Officials? Like, sure, but Drake is operating on a different level, like a superstar level, and he put his city on the map. He brought all of the A-listers from America to his city. But again, notice the distinction. For OVO Fest, it's Drake flexing, I know all these big celebs, they're here for me. The pop out is Kendrick saying, I'm bringing gangs together, I'm putting OGs on, people that, you know what, maybe his fans don't know who Tommy the Clown is, for example, but Kendrick knows who that is. And people who grew up like Kendrick know who that is. They know about Crump, they know about Hyphy, they know about all of these things. And he's showing that, no, I have a deep understanding and I'm celebrating my city and my people more so than just bringing out A-list celebs. If you think of the crescendo of the pop out, it was Kendrick standing in that great group picture with warring factions of different gangs. It wasn't him standing with one arm around an A-lister and another arm around another A-lister. He could have done that. It's Kendrick Lamar. A-listers would come out for him. But the bigger story was, I'm bringing unity to my city. And that's the difference, is the optics are that Kendrick is about the people and Drake is about himself.
There was a level of this that Drake just could never replicate, and honestly, never will be able to replicate in that way.
And which is also fine, right? I think one thing is, everyone doesn't have to be the same, and what Drake does well, he does amazing. And I think that's something that we can't take away from him. He single-handedly has been able to transition from the physical era to the blog era, now to streaming. He's been able to put artists on from different cities and really getting them record deals, getting them notoriety. I think the question comes at some point, okay, what is your compass now? You're closer to 40 than 30. You have a kid. You've done all of the big checkmark things. Like, what motivates you? What is your purpose? What is your legacy? And if I was advising Drake, that's what I would tell him. What's the deeper meaning? It can't just be another hit record, another celebrity relationship, or another headline. What is the bigger legacy that you're trying to leave behind? It's hard because on one hand, I think it's very easy to say that he's done, he can't come back from this. But I think the thing is, now culture isn't a monolith and fan bases are very fragmented, very segmented. There are a group of people who will forever ride for Drake. And I see this in my mentions all the time. You mentioned even one thing critical about him, and they will literally, like a swarm, come and attack you. And he represents, for this very, I think it's a younger generation, a younger demo, people who I wouldn't really describe as true hip hop heads, but they're Drake fans. And I think with them, he'll always be good. I think within a pop space, he'll always be good. Camila Cabello put him on 2 records on her album. And I can see artists like that continuing to go into the Drake well, because he'll probably give you a hit record. But when it comes to credibility, when it comes to authenticity, when it comes to respect, things that I do think Drake really values, I think he's lost that forever. And that's not something you come back from. Is that to say he's not going to make a ton of money? He's probably going to continue doing brand deals and expand into other facets of entertainment? Absolutely. But respect is just something you can't buy. It's something that you can't manufacture. In an era of clout chasing, an era of buying followers, an era of the algorithm, you still can't buy respect. You can't game the system. It's either there or it isn't.
So he has had the most commercially successful hip-hop tour that we've seen. Each tour continues to grow some more, most recently with It's All a Blur. His albums, despite the quality of them declining, get the most streams. You look at the numbers on Spotify or any of the other streaming platforms, he's still in the top 3. In some platforms, he's still even ahead of Kendrick in terms of the streams, even right now. That's what a lot of the Twitter or internet chatter can miss from the people that aren't as connected, but do make up the majority, as opposed to that small but vocal minority that can live on Twitter, that can live elsewhere. So even though this beef may be as monumental as anything we've seen since Jay-Z and Nas, or even back then, this also isn't a situation where 50 Cent disses Ja Rule and then Ja Rule's career is never the same, because Drake is in a very different position.
I think it's tricky because now, unlike, let's say, those previous eras, we don't have these identifiable gatekeepers. And the gatekeepers we do have, whether it be on the media side or in radio, even to some extent at the record labels, either they're different kind of people. And what I mean is, a lot of them just aren't rap people, to be super honest. Even if they work in hip hop, they cover it. You can tell they don't know the history. They don't care. Like, when you talk to them, you can just tell things like lyrics and authenticity mean nothing to them. All they care about is numbers. But I want to know, is this record good? That's great. It has a lot of streams. It's doing great on TikTok. But is this artist good? But that somehow has been like lost in the wash. So unlike back in the day, I think, where like a Source magazine or Hot 97 or XXL, they would have said, oh no, you're now persona non grata. We don't like you. But now, in reality, like, who are the gatekeepers? for the most part, it's anyone, every fan is a gatekeeper, because if you have a social media account, if you're streaming records, you're making your own playlist, you're your own gatekeeper. So my kind of encouragement to my fellow colleagues, like people who've been in this industry, we understand the history of hip hop, we love it, but we also do feel very protective of it. I think that you have to push for better. And a big issue was in the past, because the media landscape is changing so vastly, all of these gatekeepers were kissing the ring when it came to artists. And it didn't matter what they did. Just please be in our magazine. Just please perform at our summer jam. Like, we will do anything to appease you. But I actually think that was detrimental, because behind the scenes, people were talking real and were saying how they really felt. And now fans are starting to hear some of those industry conversations. There was a lot of displeasure with Drake, his team, and how they move for a long time.
Which does make me think of when things changed for Drake, because there was a point early in his career where the records had meaning. So Far Gone, Nothing Was the Same, Take Care. Those are albums that meant something. You heard in the music, there was a relatability to Drake. But my theory on him is that Nothing Was the Same after Nothing Was the Same. And after that, then comes the Apple deal. Then we get the mixtapes. And I did enjoy a few of those early mixtapes, but then you get Views, and then after that,
I like Care Package. I've heard all those separately, but I like that he put them together.
Yeah, most of those songs were from that era that we're talking about, but it was still a departure from what we expect. Scorpion had a few hits there, but ever since then, the albums just got more progressively geared towards the streaming era, where it was better, frankly, to be commercially consistent, but not occasionally great. And occasionally great is the stuff that gives you the classics. It's the output that would make you want to put out a tight 13-track album like Nothing Was the Same and try to compete for Grammys, try to do all those things. I made the comparison to him and Tom Cruise, where early in Tom Cruise's career, he was someone that would do more risky projects like a Magnolia or something
risky
like that.
Business.
Or Risky Business as well. But then by the time Tom Cruise is jumping on couches on Oprah show, I'm just doing these Mission Impossible type of projects.
Got
of
the movies, franchise, yeah.
The paycheck. Exactly. Yeah. And Drake, especially now that he has this huge lucrative deal, he's incentivized to put out these mid projects, and he's going to recoup and make so much more money than he ever did off of the classics that he made for Baby and Slim at Cash Money. And he's just printing money in that way. He optimized for the revenue, but at a fault, we, the fans, were the ones that lost out on the great art. But the game changed. And we've talked about how he adapted from the blog era to selling physicals and then selling streams now. But this is one of the downsides that comes from it, right? He clearly made a decision.
Yeah, and I think it's difficult because in the beginning, what I loved about Drake was that he was different and he was vulnerable and he showcased this, especially if you're like a millennial, because we're all around the same age, but this sort of like sensitive masculinity, like he's the guy who takes you on a date and then like sobs about it afterwards. And if you were in your sort of mid to like early 20s at that time, you felt like he was rapping your life or singing your entire life. The problem is like 10, 15 years later, we've grown up. So I want to hear grown man records from this person. And I just don't hear that. If I'm listening to someone who calls themselves a rich baby daddy and is hanging out with Sexy Red, that's like the old dad at the club. I don't want to talk to you. I certainly don't want to date you. But that's what it started to feel like, where whether it was the music, his aesthetics, his fashion choices, yikes. It just really felt like somebody who was going through an identity crisis and thinking, what is the trend now to glom onto versus being a trendsetter? And that was something that in the beginning, I think he really was able to do. Because if you go even to his earliest catalog, I don't think those records hit because he was trying to sound like an artist from America. You could tell he was trying to be a little Lil Wayne, a little bit Trey Songz. He was trying to emulate what he thought was like this masculine American man. But when he was himself with records like Brand New, for example, or is it Too Late? Is that the one with Sampha? Too Much? One of those records.
Too Much.
Yeah, Too Much. That's one of his greatest records because he's talking about the dysfunction in his family, how that hurts him. These are all universal themes of alienation, of feeling the distance with your family. Those are the records that we love. Him just doing another strip club record, another club record. It's okay. We know you can do that, but what else? But I think you made such a great point. We're in an era now where between streaming and these huge like blockbuster deals certain artists are signing, Drake reportedly signed a $400 million deal with Universal Music Group. You are incentivized to just put out content. Any single thing he wants to release is now a commercial release. The more he releases, he can get closer to recouping that advance.
He and Taylor Swift, since 2018, when they both had their most recent Republic Records deals, have put out 14 combined projects. That includes her re-release albums, the 5 albums that she's released since, and then all of his that he's released.
I can't name 5 records from either of those artists. And that's not a diss to them, but it's when you flood the market with product, you devalue your artistry. And I get it. We're constantly pressured to put stuff out there or else the algorithm's not going to prop up your stuff and no one's going to see the great work you're doing. I get it. But I think it's like this perfect storm where it's all about quantity now and not quality. Do something then artistically interesting. Jumping on the hottest producer with the hottest new Gen Z artist. That to me isn't inspired. It almost feels like Drake's at the part of his career. He's trying to chase the relevancy and chase the trends instead of leading them.
Let's take a break for our Chartmetric Stat of the Week. This one is a callback to our episode a couple of weeks ago on Sphere Entertainment, because we talked briefly about the jam bands and rock acts that have graced that stage. They may not reach a ton of fans who stream their music endlessly, but the fans that do show up for those concerts and they showed up for these residencies. For example, Phish, a group that has right around 500,000 Spotify monthly listeners, they still did 4 shows at the Sphere and sold out all of them. And there are artists on Spotify with more than 50 million followers on that platform who probably couldn't sell the same size venues as a group like Phish has, let alone a residency at the Sphere. It's another example of how streams don't necessarily correlate to ticket sales. Let's get back to the episode. The closest thing that Drake got to this was, there's one of those Scary Hour 3-packs that he released. Maybe it was the Lemon Pepper freestyle with Rick Ross, where he's talking about go to the parent-teacher conference and the other parents asking him if he knows Beyonce, Nicki Minaj. Like, that's not what we want to hear. Yes, you're giving us a glimpse of what parent life is like, but no, not that you have to copy what Jay-Z did necessarily, but talk about what it's like in a co-parenting situation. Your kid's in one continent, you're touring across the world. Maybe he will do it eventually. I feel like 100 gigs is him just sharing a lot of stuff that frankly,
I think he was just Drake cleaning out his external hard drive. I need to clear this drive because it's about to be fall. So let's just delete a bunch of stuff. That's what it felt like. It felt very disjointed. And even the way he released it on a fake Finsta account. Sir, you're almost 40 years old. Really a fake Instagram. And to me, it's almost the plausible deniability. If all the records flop, oh, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. I was hacked.
Right.
Then at least stand on it. No, I put this out because this is quality. I want you to hear it. It's no different than when he was battling Kendrick and using Tupac's voice or using Snoop's voice. Hey, that wasn't me. That was the ghost of Tupac saying that. If you're going to say something, then stand on 10 and say it. And I think Drake has never been that person. Going back to your point about his personal life, I understand if artists do want to seem somewhat guarded, especially for him. He essentially was outed as a father by Pusha T. Pusha T was the one who almost shamed him into being a good dad. So I understand if he's a little hesitant and you don't want to expose your child to those things. But the other part of it, and I firmly believe, an artist can't make good art unless you also live life. And if all you do is wake up, hang out with your OVO boys, go to the strip club, buy another Hermes Birkin bag for your future wife, that's what your music is going to be. Like, I always advise him, go take a sabbatical, go travel, go do philanthropic work, right? If you feel I am so uninspired, go help someone else, right? Or even go into Hollywood, go pivot into your first love of acting, get into a role, do a serious role that's going to take some real chops, challenge yourself, become just a better, more interesting human. But that's something that like we as fans can only hope for. A lot of artists, they're not ready or doing that personal growth.
We've talked about the lack of hits that have came from Drake because he hasn't been living life in these types of ways. But I've also noticed the lack of hip hop hits in general outside of Not Like Us. It's been a relatively quiet year. And you tweeted about this recently. Let's talk it out.
We're in a very strange place right now in the music business where in many ways, hip hop is everywhere and nowhere at the same time, meaning that all of these artists who are charting, you look at Shaboozy, for example, number one record that's taking a nod from Jaquan's, and artists are being inspired sonically, aesthetically, through their slang, through their lexicon. Like hip hop is everywhere, but the music that's being categorized like with the nomenclature of hip hop isn't selling the way that we would think it would sell. In fact, interestingly enough, last year was hip hop 50, the 50th anniversary of the genre. We didn't get a number one hip hop record on the Hot 100 until September. I think it was Drake, actually. It was like a group record. But it's so strange to me because the fans are clearly on social media 24/7. I know because many of them are trolling me. They seem to be very much like on the tech forefront. They're the ones who are into streaming. But I almost feel like this new generation of fans, they listen to the record once. If they don't love it, they're done with it. Disposed, like on to the next. And then we look at the industry as a large. You don't see records, even like hip hop artists, getting the same push they used to get. Let's look at someone like a Sabrina Carpenter, for example. You can't escape Espresso. Like, I was never a fan of hers. I didn't really know who that was. I would hear it at the gym. If I'm in an Uber, like, the radio's playing it. I'm scrolling on social media. And again, I don't follow her. I don't follow anything related to her. I'm seeing photos of her. She's winning an award. She's on the cover of a magazine. Somebody's working that record. Is it a great pop record? Sure. But somebody's working that record. And I just think behind the scenes that hip hop is not getting that kind of push the way that it used to be. So if you ask me even now, okay, what is Travis Scott single? I don't know. What's Kanye single? I don't know. What's Drake single? I don't know. What's Sabrina single? Espresso. What's Shaboozy single? Bar Song. You just know because you're inundated. And I do think behind the scenes, and it's a whole other conversation, the infrastructure has changed so much that artists are really told your team needs to do the work, your manager, and you need to do the work. If you already are going viral, we'll add sort of the kerosene on top of it. But by and large, we're not going to have no focus track. We're not going to do the sort of started from a small venue and then you get up to an arena. Like those things are just not there anymore. And I would love to see artists go back to that, like truly build a fan base and put out their best record. But if you start putting out 27 records on this project and they're all mid, can you also be shocked that the label doesn't want to spend $2 million to promote you?
One of the things that's happened in the past couple of years is there's been more and more reports about the decline in market share that hip hop has done, specifically on the recorded music side.
Yeah.
And it's one of those stories that lacks so much context because first off, hip hop was also early to streaming. We talked about Drake doing the big deal with Apple Music. All that stuff helped propel hip hop further than other genres did, especially in the late 2010s when streaming was really growing 20% plus year over year. And everyone was so happy about growth just continuing to go up and to the right.
I mean, SoundCloud rap, we had an entire genre based upon a DSP that we didn't see with other genres. But I will also say, because I know the industry will say, okay, well, look at the artists and look at the records they're making. And there's a lot of trash. There's a lot of the artists themselves. A lot of them just became derivative. There's so many future clones. So many want to be Drake. So many want to be Wayne's. How many artists can you really think of have a distinct sound, a style? You would pay money to go see them live. I read recently the only hip hop artist doing currently arena tours is Travis Scott. I remember watching Travis perform at Mike Dean's apartment. And I interviewed him when he was opening for Iggy Azalea. No one knew who he was. So think about how long we're talking, like what, a decade at least, give or take. So this is somebody who had put in that work over years. And a lot of these new artists, you got one record and they'll look at me and say, yeah, but I got an 8-figure deal. Okay. Nobody has to work for their deal anymore. Or even if the record label, the music isn't really paying your bills. Okay. The sneaker company just gave me an endorsement. Why do I need to put out an album? You go listen to Illmatic in your free time. I just got a Puma deal. Yeah, but Illmatic is going to last longer than your shoes. You're not Michael right. Jordan. You're not Yeezy. You know what I mean? And I think the finances have also changed greatly. Where do I believe people need to get paid 1,000,000,000% in my book, Fashion Killa, which chronicles hip hop and high fashion? One of the big issues was hip hop influencing fashion and just not getting paid for it until people like the Jay-Z's and Dame Dash's or FUBU, Karl Kanai, they started creating their own brands and were able to monetize it. But I think the flip side of that is now there is a ton of like money in the industry, but you're not incentivized to put out classics. Like Nas put out Illmatic because he was supposed to be Baby Rakim. Now artists are like, I don't know who Rakim is. I don't know who Nas is. And I just bought myself a Bentley. Because on the brand side, they don't care about your music. Like the people who are signing these endorsement deals, all they look at are your followers. Ideally, we can use the record and maybe like a commercial or something, but they're not like hip hop heads sitting here. Wow, I really love the rhyme structure and the flow is amazing. No, it's like you have a ton of followers. How can we leverage that? And there's so many artists now, this is across genre. I would argue they're more influencers or reality stars than artists. Like music became almost an entree to just secure right. the bag in other areas. What do we value now? Oh, where are you on the Forbes list? Nobody asks, oh, are you an innovative company? Are you a good leader? It's no, are you a billionaire? Like right now, it's the race to be a trillionaire. That's all that matters. The first person to hit the trillion is, okay, so what did you accomplish? Did you help people? Are you a great role model? Is this a blueprint for us to follow? Or is it just like money? And I'm a capitalist like anybody else is. But when that has overshadowed, especially in the arts to such an extent, this is what you're going to get. You're not going to get Illmatic. Illmatic didn't really sell. Reasonable Doubt barely sold. Jay-Z couldn't get a record deal. As we were talking about, my next book is the Rockefeller book. And of course, it's the history of the label, but also the business aspects of the label. And it's so crazy to me talking to all of these day one guys. They're like, Jay couldn't get a record deal. He just couldn't. Everyone just wasn't feeling him. You're too old. You rap too fast. We don't really get it. So he had to essentially self-fund and have his own startup capital to create something independent until ultimately they did sign a deal with Def Jam. But I think that hunger, that drive, a lot of it has been taken away if you got one record on TikTok and now there's a huge bidding war and you're a multimillionaire. And I think you're going to start to see there's a difference between the Kendricks of the world and some of these other artists. Kendrick doesn't have the biggest records. I would argue he doesn't even have a club record. There's a reason Kendrick is doing the Super Bowl and not somebody else, because he has the strong enough catalog. He's an incredibly strong performer. We saw that in the pop out. And he has that cultural authenticity. And that's something like you can't buy. It doesn't matter if he has one follower or a million followers. And that's something that you can't manufacture, you can't concoct. But I don't know how do you relay that when we're in a market that's showing you the opposite.
There's a lot of parallels with this conversation with what's happening in music journalism as well. Because
does music journalism exist?
Well, it doesn't in the same
way. You sound like such a dinosaur.
I'll say it in this way, though, because we talked about lists earlier, right? And if you look at these lists of who are the top voices in hip hop, you look at the people at the top of that list.
The most it's toxic a lot of the same stuff that find.
We're talking. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of the same stuff that we're talking about here. And then if you really ask the people in times they've been checked, do you really care about this? What are you actually trying to get? That doesn't mean you need to just glorify everything that comes to the door. You need to be critical where it deserves to be critical. But what are we actually doing? So there's so many parallels with 100%. That as well.
And it's also tricky, right? Because I do think that the media companies in many ways just allowed the search engines and the social media companies to just run roughshod. If we're going to be honest, like, all right, we're pivoting to video. Everyone pivoted to video. Oh, just kidding. Now we do podcasting. Oh, wait, no, we don't do that anymore. Now we do long form. If you don't know who you are and you don't know who the audience you're serving, this is what we're going to get. And we're in this era of clickbait. I talked about, I did one of the videos on my channel was talking about the complex media list. And of course, this is just one media list. And behind the scenes, people just nominate their friends. All right. Big spoiler alert. But to me, what was very dangerous, even in their own write-up, all they focused on were followers. And they would even say, this person is known for fake news. This person is problematic. This person has viable sexual abuse cases against them, but he has the most followers. So I'm thinking, so one of the few media companies left is essentially like laying down and saying, this is what it is. Wash all over us. And I think that's a problem. Where does everything need to be the Atlantic or the New Yorker? Of course not. But there has to be a balance. And one thing that's been really important for me, whether I'm doing shows like this or having a YouTube channel or being on Twitter, we don't see a lot of authorities, especially women. Like the women in this space have been doing it since I was a little kid. Spoiler alert, I'm not a little kid anymore. So that shit shows you like how things have not gotten better. And I think that the fans, they're looking for cooler heads to prevail. Will there always be clickbait? Will there always be appealing to the lowest common denominator? Of course. Like, I get it. Social media, the algorithm, it wants you to get angry and get riled up. Cool. But I also think from a representation perspective, we got to see smart people who know hip hop, who love it, women who are more than just eye candy. Like, I think these things are really important. And I implore my colleagues, especially those of us who've been in the game, I've almost hit my 20-year mark. I hope I get like a gold Rolex or something. Nowadays, it's going to be probably nothing. It's this idea of having that longevity and being an authority figure. When you're an OG, you don't need to be chasing rappers to be your friends. Like, to me, there's nothing more pathetic when I see people I know, some of them older, some of them my age, some younger, like they want Drake to be their friend. They really think Kendrick is their friend. Spoiler alert, neither of them are picking you up from the airport. They're not bringing you chicken noodle soup when you're sick. And once you leave your post, they don't care about you. It is what it is, right? But we have a lot of groupies. And it's funny because women always get that sort of title in hip hop. But for those of us who work behind the scenes, men are the biggest groupies. Like, they really think rappers are their friends. They want to be in the entourage. They want to smoke their blunt. They want to drink their alcohol. Like, hilarious to me. And I think you can see in a lot of these voices out right now, it's almost that they're performing for an audience of one. Drake, love me. Send me the OVO shirt. It's my man. You're 57 years old. What are we doing? But I also understand if you're in a place where you're not secure in your career, in your expertise, yeah, you got to chase the next hottest person. Because if you don't get that interview and that younger person gets it, now you feel obsolete.
Right. You burn out. And especially the way that content and everything works today, it's never been a better time than now to have that type of life cycle transpire for any type of creative.
Absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Before we close things out, so Mia, is there anything else you want to let the Chapital audience know about or where they can find you?
Absolutely. So you can find me at Somia K on all social media. I do have a YouTube that I just launched because, as we said, the media landscape is pretty crazy now. So it's good to own the land that you live on. And that's just at my first and last name. And my book, Fashion Killa, How Hip Hop Revolutionized High Fashion, is officially in paperback now. It's still available in hardcover. It is the first 50-year retrospective of hip hop and fashion. It features great interviews, stories, photos, Tupac, Tommy Hilfiger, Biggie, Lil' Kim, Nicki Minaj, Kanye, the list goes on and on. So whether you're a hip hop head or a fashion head, I think you're really going to enjoy that book. And otherwise, just stay tuned. More and more stuff is coming.
Sounds good. Thank you. Appreciate you coming on. If you enjoy this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.